This week on the Zone of Truth, let out your battle cry as Griff and I discuss the recent Commander and Guardian class playtests, and of course, answer some listener questions. I'm your host, Steve, in the studio with your GM and my co-host, Griffin. Roll a will save. You're in the Zone of Truth. And we're back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're recovered from Poseidon's Bounty 4.
It feels like a distant memory at this point.
I know. Very fun times, but we're back on our regular schedule, recording an old-fashioned Zone of Truth. How you doing today, Griff?
Doing well. Gonna get some crawfish boil after this.
That's right. Yeah, what's going on there?
There's a local barbecue place that's doing a crawfish boil today, and we timed this at the right time to record this, go to 3 hours of a crawfish boil, and then do the Drunken Disorderly tonight.
That's right. And it is May the 4th. So May the 4th be with you, Griffin. Happy
is
holidays.
Is that an and also with you thing, or is that just the church?
I think that's just the church, although I could be wrong and I'll probably get roasted if I am. But to display, look, all right, we got Disorderly tonight.
Yep.
And I want to tell you something, and I'll let I want to keep this to yourself, and then I'll tell the patrons tonight when we get on, but I think I fucked up a little bit.
Yeah.
Because we had our poll that went out to the patrons that was like, hey, what do you want to do? Usually there's a episode listen along that's thematic to whatever month we're doing. We'll find something fun. So this month we're like, hey, if we want to do like a private Fortnite Star Wars event server, we'll do that. Or we could do a watch along to Star Wars The Phantom Menace because we're celebrating the 25th anniversary of that. And Phantom Menace cleaned up.
Yep.
100% votes. And then I remembered that I'm supposed to see The Phantom Menace in theaters tomorrow with my girlfriend.
Oh boy.
Which I already have tickets for. So I'm going to see The Phantom Menace twice in 24 hours.
That sucks. That's awful.
I made a huge mistake.
Yeah, that's rough.
And I think The Phantom Menace is the movie I've seen most in my life. I was trying to think through. I've probably seen The Phantom Menace upwards of 20 or 30 times.
Oh, it's going to be weird when you're in the theater tomorrow and you're like trying not to quote every line because you just saw it.
Yes. And I could do like half of them already. And my girlfriend's never seen it. So I'm going to probably be really annoying.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we got that coming. Besides that, what you been up to, man?
Oh man, I've been all over the place. We watched the Fallout show, which was phenomenal. Mm. Even if you don't like Fallout, like Chris has never played any of the Fallout games. He just knows the premise and has really loved the show as well. It's got a really good blend of nods to the game, humor, but also, you know, just really cool effects, really cool action. So I highly recommend it. And the ending of it has me so hyped for season 2. Which I'm pretty sure they're greenlit for at this point.
Mm-hmm. It's a huge hit. I saw the pilot and thought it was great. I don't know when I'll be able to clean up the rest of the show, but I certainly intend to.
Yeah. That has sparked, because I watched it with Haley, an interest in Haley about Fallout. So she doesn't really like the gameplay style of the Fallout games. She doesn't like first-person games in general.
Well, you can toggle with the third person.
You can, but it's really wonky to play that way. Really. So I've been playing a new playthrough on the big screen so she can watch along. So Fallout 4. Just because it's really hard when you've played all of the Fallout games to go back to the older ones, even though I feel that they have a better story. Mm-hmm. It's just the gameplay is so much better in 4. That like you shoot something dead on square in the middle of the head in your sights in 3 and New Vegas and it misses somehow.
Yep.
And it just feels like the gunplay is not very good in that. So I was just like, you know what? She doesn't know anything about the story in 4 either. Let's just do 4. It's going to give her all those cool lore tidbits anyway.
I think that makes sense. Like Brotherhood of Steel is huge in 4, like, mm-hmm. So she'll have that context. Like, I think that's a good pairing.
Yeah. The other cool thing is I heard they are fast-tracking a Fallout 2 remake in the Fallout 4 engine, dope. Which will be awesome. I'll be playing that the second that's out. So I've been really into that, but I think you and I got into something recently that I have to, you know, I have to kind of temper my recommendation of this because it's Ghost Stories dub. It's mm-hmm. an anime that the dub, I guess, didn't really have a lot of oversight or even a lot of direction or translation from the Japanese to the English. And so it's absolutely whack. It's the official dub and it sounds like a YouTube abridged video.
Mm-hmm.
And there's cursing and there's like just crass humor, but it's so funny. I wouldn't recommend it if like, if certain 2000s words are like triggering for you at all, because it's definitely like early 2000s humor.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can put that aside, I still think it's really funny. And it's just, it's hilarious to basically listen to these voice actors ad lib what they think is happening in these scenes. So if for anything else, I think it's worth it to listen to the first couple for that, because I don't think they go super off the rails into like, you know, being super crass until like episode 4. Mm-hmm. So watching the first 2 or 3, you're probably pretty safe there. In terms of games, I can't believe it's been so long since we've talked about stuff. I've been like deep in the Balatro trenches for weeks.
Yeah.
And we haven't talked about this on the show.
We just haven't had a good opportunity to catch up on the stuff that like we've been into. Because guess what? I've got a list too.
Yeah. So I got really into Balatro. Obviously still playing Fallout 4. Highly recommend Balatro. It's a roguelike deck building game based off of poker. It's really fun, really easy to play. And then Haley finally got a Steam Deck. So I spent last weekend configuring both Steam Decks to run World of Warcraft. And we got back into World of Warcraft last weekend. And I think we've played to, we're about level 20 now. The levels got squashed since the last time we played. So it's like a whole new thing, but it feels like you're leveling really fast, at least in my opinion, compared to the last time I played it. But that's been pretty fun too. We're playing Worgen. This is like our first time playing an Alliance character. We usually play Horde, but that's me.
Hell yeah, man. Well, let's switch gears for a second. I can chat about what I've been into. So I got a movie recommendation. I also was watching Ghost Stories, echoing everything that Griff said. I think it's utterly hilarious. Some early 2000s problematic humor these days, so, you know, content warning on that, but it's very, very funny. And I had some new music I've been listening to. I read a book, so I'll just kind of do that in whatever order I want. I'm going to start with a book. So I read a book called Fantasticland, and it fucking rips. It is a compilation of, like, recountings of a fictional event that happened. So in the narrative of this story, a giant hurricane hit Florida. And there are two major theme parks in Florida. Obviously, you've got Disney World and Universal. But in this fictional universe, there's a third one called Fantasticland. And Fantasticland, the people that run it, get this idea that if a giant hurricane hits and the park gets like cut off from civilization, essentially, while they're waiting for like Red Cross to get in and like rescue, like, you know, just reconstruction stuff to happen, the park is probably going to get looted or damaged or vandalized in some way. So they built these shelters under the park and they recruited a bunch of people that worked there that said, hey, we stockpiled water, we stockpiled food, we stockpiled medical supplies. If something happens, like a hurricane, go down in these shelters, we'll pay you a shit ton of money. And then once it's over, you just got to hang out in the park for a couple days until rescue gets there. And so that happens in the book. But when the rescuers get there, it's turned into some sort of like Lord of the Flies situation.
Oh, geez.
Where everyone is just like stringing up bodies and killing each other. And it got super tribal. And so the book is this like non-fictional style recounting of what happened from a bunch of different people's perspectives. So it starts out with like a meteorologist talking about why the hurricane was as bad as it was. And then there's the perspectives of the people that showed up at the end, like the National Guard and the Red Cross. And then there are perspectives of people who actually lived in these tribes and did some of these horrible things. It's a really compelling book. I really enjoyed it. for people that liked my recommendation of Devolution a long time ago, or it read a lot like World War Z kind of a thing, like one event told from multiple perspectives in this sort of like fictional, non-fictional way, check it out. It fucking rips. It's very good. Something else that rips. I saw a movie in theaters last week called Abigail. Didn't know too much about it, saw the trailer, and it is a vampire movie. So I was like, I gotta go see this thing. And it's a horror movie where these ne'er-do-wells capture this little girl and they bring her to a mansion and they're going to hold her hostage and wait for a ransom payment for her very rich dad. And once they hold her there for a little while, they realize that she is a vampire and she starts picking them off one by one. There are some legitimate creepy scares. There are some incredible gore shots, and it's fucking hilarious. Like, it's not a scary movie slapsticky type of humor. It's just like tightly written dialogue. Mm-hmm. It's a blast. I had so much fun watching it. And that's not just me from like the clearly biased vampire slant. I really think this was a very, very fun movie. By the time this comes out, you're probably not going to have a whole lot of opportunity to catch it in theaters, but I really recommend anybody check this movie out. I loved it.
See, when you put this on the agenda, I knew you had seen Abigail in theaters, and I wasn't sure if you were going to talk about the movie or you were just going to gush about your girlfriend for a minute.
Listen, I could go. We could do the next 90 minutes about my girlfriend. I'm very head over heels, but I also think that went on the HLP calendar, my mistake. It was just like 6 o'clock, Abigail.
Yeah.
And everyone got a push notification.
Wait, nobody questioned you on that one.
Yeah. All right. Well, so besides that, I've been listening to a ton of brand new music. A couple of my favorites put out new records in the last couple months, and I just got to throw out some notable mentions. The Ghost Inside put out a record called Searching for Solace, which is my favorite Ghost Inside record since Get What You Give. It's more like metalcore than what they've done before, so a lot more cleans than I expected. But boy, does that record rip. And there are some heavy tracks on there, so don't get it twisted. Like, they still got a bite to them, but they're going to be playing at Sonic Temple in a couple weeks. Griff, I don't know. Maybe we go. But I can't wait to see them play new music. It's going to be awesome. We also have a new record from Aaron West in the Roaring Twenties called In Lieu of Flowers. So my folk emo friends out there, check it out. It's a blast, frontlined by the dude who leads the Wonder Years. So if you like the Wonder Years, check out Aaron West in the Roaring Twenties. You're not going to get let down there. And then finally, I know sometimes this dude's a little controversial in the music scene, but Machine Gun Kelly did a collaboration record with Trippy Red called Genre Sad Boy. And it is just, it's wall-to-wall emo rap. And oh my God, is it great. Like, that's just extremely my shit. I really recommend it. It's a blast. I like emo music, and I didn't know that I liked emo rap, but I guess I do. So I would say Ghost Inside, there's a song called Split, and the first song off the record, I think it's called Going Under. Those are a couple recommendations I would give just to see if you like it. Aaron West in the Roaring Twenties, check out just the title track In Lieu of Flowers. That'll get you a good speed for the record. And then the Machine Gun Kelly record, I really recommend Hiding in the Hills if you want to get a flavor of what any of these records are like. And if you like the songs that I recommend, check out the rest of the record. You're gonna love it. But let's get into the playtest, Griff. Let's
All right.
Do it.
Yeah, playtest, baby. Paizo released a playtest.
Yeah, so I've got a little bit of preamble here just for the people who aren't up to date on their Paizo news, and then we're gonna really like get into these classes. So I got some copy that I pulled from the website. Welcome to the playtest for Pathfinder Battlecry. This upcoming sourcebook, scheduled for Gen Con 2025, brings gritty combat to your gaming tables as exemplified by these two new classes, the Commander and the Guardian. The Commander is a battlefield leader whose clever use of tactics can turn the tide of any fight. They deploy abilities called tactics that grant allies extra movement or bonus actions that can follow certain orders. The Guardian is a defensive combatant who focuses on squeezing every last drop of protection from their armor for themselves and their allies. The Guardian can intercept strikes meant for other characters and taunt foes to draw their attention. This playtest runs until June 21st, so please provide any feedback to Paizo via the survey link inside that playtest document. Playtest document is available for free online, or if you want to drop your thoughts in the Paizo forums once you get a chance to play these classes for yourself, we all encourage you to do that because that's just going to help them fine-tune these classes for everybody upon release. let's just start super high level, Griff. What are your initial thoughts on this playtest, and how do we feel about how these new classes fit with the system and the other pre-existing classes?
So I think these both occupy a niche that is not served mm-hmm. in the system currently. The Guardian maybe a little bit less so because it shares some space with the Champion. But when you think about a tank, mm-hmm. and you know, I just brought up World of Warcraft, a tank is traditionally not a very viable option in tabletop gaming because there's not a reliable way to give yourself aggro, basically.
I think the example relevant to our listeners we can pull from is how many times in Kerrigan Crown did you have an enemy that was like, oh, I've attacked Ikmer once and realize I have no chance of hitting him.
It's like, so, it's hard to play like, an intelligent enemy yeah. that would continuously attack this armored wall mm-hmm. instead of walking 15 feet past them to attack the back line.
Yeah, and just like murder Lyra or something, like right. somebody you can hit a lot easier.
So the Guardian providing a mechanic to do that is really cool. I think there's a lot of shades of Vanguard from Starfinder in this Guardian, mm-hmm. which is one of my favorite classes of all time. I love playing Vanguard. Probably my favorite Starfinder class. And so I was really excited for this one in particular because it suits a play style that I really like to play. Commander is something that I was actually anticipating yes. when the Psychic and Thaumaturge were released. So something like a Warlord class from D&D 4th edition is what I was expecting to be that new class that they released there. It obviously wasn't, but I think there was a lot of buzz about this style of class, an intelligence-based Marshal that can manipulate the action economy in the party's favor in order to, you know, in order to kind of raise all ships in that way. And by golly, I think reading through the Commander, they've succeeded maybe a little too much in creating a class that fulfills that power fantasy. Mm-hmm. But neither thing really existed. And so this is pretty new territory for Paizo classes. And I'm really excited about what it brings to a party because, you know, a commander could slot into almost any party configuration and be built drastically differently. Guardian is a huge new option for people that want to play marshals a different way.
Yeah, I mean, full disclosure, and I was kind of going to mention this when we got to Guardian. I think if Guardian was out when we started Speak with Plants, that's what I probably would have done for Rocks. Yeah. Like, that's kind yeah. of the build that I wanted to do and found something analogous in the Mountain Stance Monk, but it's not exactly what I wanted to do. It's
a little
just
bit more in harm's
closer.
Way, yeah. like the Guardian can be.
So that in particular also did really excite me. The Commander is a shiny new toy that I'm excited to see how people can drop in to different things, especially considering that you're right. This is something that we called a long time ago, and we've really been wanting a class that best captures the action economy of Pathfinder, like capitalizes yeah. mm-hmm. on that. And I think that's going to do that.
This is truly the wizard for martial purists.
Yes. I mean, we'll get into it in a second, but like there are some very clear, like very clear parallels between wizard and commander.
Yeah. I think this is going to be something that's similar to Alchemist, but maybe in a little bit of a different way. I think playing a commander as it stands requires a good deal of system mastery mm. to actually make it shine as it should, much like with an alchemist, where you really need to know what items are available to craft as an alchemist to really make the most out of that class.
Yeah. Well, how about we just get into it, man? So the way that we're going to do this, I think we've kind of done this similarly before when we have two classes to talk about in these playtest styles. We're each going to kind of present the class, and both of us have read through both classes, so we can provide some color commentary, both of us, for each one. But the way we're doing this today is you're going to be taking points on the Commander, and then I'm going to be starting the discussion about the Guardian. Let's do these in order. If you want to start chatting about Commander, let's rock and roll, baby.
Sure. So Steve covered kind of the basic overview of what a Commander is. Their key attribute is intelligence. They are the first, well, not first, because I think there's Investigator that is considered an intelligence-based Marshal. And I guess Alchemist, you could argue, is a Marshal. But to me, they are the first like true Marshal that is using intelligence in a more combat instead of exploity way. They have 8 hit points plus con modifier. Their initial proficiencies are expert in perception. That's awesome. They're trained in fortitude, expert in reflex and will. They're trained in society and warfare lore, but you'll get a bunch of additional skills because your key attribute is intelligence. They're trained in simple weapons, martial weapons, and unarmed attacks, trained in all armor and unarmored defense. And then they're trained in the commander class DC. A couple things I want to note about their proficiency. They get the equivalent of like 1E evasion in both reflex and will.
God, that rips.
They get master weapon proficiency at the same progression as any non-fighter gunslinger marshal.
Mm-hmm.
They get armor proficiency in the same progression as non-champion marshals. They get their class DC scaling like a wizard's casting DC. So the legendary at 19th, that's something they get, which is really important because a lot of their tactics require a save against their class DC.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of other abilities they have scale off of warfare lore, which they get automatic proficiency up to legendary in. So kind of like the missed inventor in intelligent martial.
Oh, that's right,
certainly an intelligence-based martial, although using their intelligence in a very different way. But they get, like an inventor gets crafting scaling, they get warfare lore scaling. What's really important about that warfare lore scaling is this class has one of the best skill compressions I've ever seen in a class. You can get medicine to warfare lore, you can get initiative to warfare lore, you can get deception to warfare lore. In certain circumstances, you can get athletics to warfare lore and intimidate to warfare lore. So warfare lore is like their god skill at this point. Free scaling proficiency and all of those things is huge. The main, I guess, pieces of this class are they have a commander's banner, which acts kind of like a Bard's Inspire Courage, but with different bonuses. It provides a +1 status bonus to will saves and DCs against fear effects. This can be either tied to a pole and like wielded or in your backpack. They basically say here that you can like strap it to your backpack and just have it, you know, hanging off your back to give you a free hand, or it can be affixed to your shield or weapon, which is really nice. This is giving me shades of, I played a flag bearer featline bard in first edition, and flag bearer was very similar to some of the stuff you get in here, which is very cool. In addition, they get tactics. So at level 1, they have a repertoire, a folio of tactics. These are things that they can use as actions to give their allies benefits to certain movement things or certain combat things. And those tactics scale from trained to legendary, meaning that as your warfare lore scales, you get access to different levels of tactics, essentially. So there are trained tactics, expert tactics, master tactics, and legendary tactics. And every time that scales, you're able to use one more tactic per day, and you're able to add a higher level of tactic to your folio. So you start being able to use 2 tactics per day. That scales all the way up to 5 once you're legendary at 19.
This is what I was kind of alluding to before with the shades of wizard. The folio book is your spell book. The tactics are your spells. You prepare them and you can like swap them out, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, you can swap them out. You get a feat in there, kind of like a wizard feat, that allows you to swap one on the fly or when you roll initiative.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really cool. Allows you to kind of adapt to different combat scenarios. The basic, I guess, the basic set of tactics, you get 4 of them, but they're kind of grouped into 2 categories. They are mobility tactics and offensive tactics. So the mobility tactics do everything from allowing you to all of your allies in your aura to step away from enemies. They allow you all to get a climb speed, a swim speed. These are the places where if you take those, you get to use warfare lore instead of athletics for those checks. You can swap with allies, that kind of thing. They also get offensive tactics, which allow things like an attack of opportunity from an ally that doesn't normally have it, or allow you to reposition enemies or reload. Those kind of things all really depend on the party composition you have, dictating how effective they would be.
God, if you're playing a commander with a gunslinger and can just give them a free reload every turn, I like that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's not free because it's an action that you take to do the reload, but if you have multiple people using reload weapons, that is action compression there. Or it sets up things like, you know, your gunslinger in Reign of Winter has the sharpshooter
sniping duo
dedication. And so you get like a reaction, but that requires a loaded gun. My gunslinger in Speak with Plants has a reaction. He can use Fake Out, but it requires a loaded gun. So this would allow some non-attack things as well. One thing that's really cool is that you get to designate one of your squad mates, which are the people that you prepare tactics with at the start of the day, your party. You get to designate them one person every time you use a tactic, that, and they basically get an extra reaction. Mm-hmm. So they don't burn their reaction doing the tactic, because the tactics are almost all reactions. Some of them become free actions, or you get a couple free actions paired with a reaction, but for the most part, they're reactions. So from level one, you get to designate someone that can get another reaction. Your fighter can get two attack of opportunities if you designate them this way. In later levels, you can designate multiple people that way with feats. So very cool. and then the tactics just get kind of crazy. So I want to talk about some of these tactics that just kind of scale. I mean, when you get into expert, you get a tactic that allows a reduction of resistances in enemies or stupefy, depending on which one you pick. The stupefying one, like, you know, you can see how these would be used in circumstances with different enemies, right? You have a caster enemy, you're using the stupefy one, you're using Piranha Assault when you have this big tanky thing that's got, you know, resistance to physical damage or something.
Oh, yeah.
They get even cooler with like ready aim fire, where you signal a volley of ranged attacks from your allies. Executioner's Volley, like a better version of that, where everybody shoots at one target. And if that target dies because it's a death effect, everyone needs to succeed a will save against your class DC or be frightened too. Valkyrie's Charge. Again, this is a legendary one. So this is when you're taking like level 19. But just listen to this. You and your allies defy death and defeat to make a glorious final charge. You restore 80 hit points to yourself and each squad mate affected by your commander's banner. If an affected ally was unconscious due to their hit points being reduced to zero, they can immediately stand and pick up any dropped weapons. Then each affected ally can stride up to twice their speed directly towards an enemy they are observing. If they end this movement with an enemy within their reach, they can attempt to strike that enemy as a reaction.
So this costs three actions on the behalf of the commander. Conceivably, you could get like 12 actions for the price of three.
Exactly. There's a reason this one is once per day.
Right, right.
Some of them have a rider of like, you know, Executioner's Volley, for instance, is once every 10 minutes. Some of them don't have that kind of rider, so you could be using them every turn. Mm-hmm. Then we get to the feats. And honestly, I can't go into the feats specifically because there's so many things here, but there's really a couple ways you can build your commander based off of these feats. There's a whole line of the kind of recall knowledge feats, so you can get really good at recalling knowledge. You can use your warfare lore to recall knowledge on certain aspects of an enemy, and you can like recall knowledge when you attack. That's a fighter feat, but it works way better on a commander. You can build into a mount, kind of like a cavalier. You get, I believe it's ranger scaling on the animal companion. So there's feats at 6 and 10, mm-hmm. I believe, that give you a mature animal companion and then a savage or nimble animal companion. There are a ton of feats that benefit a heavy armored tanking build, which shocked me because there are so many good things in here that would make a commander a viable tank.
Yeah, we were chatting a little bit before getting on the stream here about we like the Guardian. We're going to get to the Guardian, but you could kind of do what the Guardian does as good, if not almost better, with Commander in certain feat paths.
Yeah, the only thing you're not doing is taunting, mm-hmm. really, but and Guardian is built to have a little bit of damage reduction and that kind of thing baked in, mitigating crits, that sort of thing, which we'll get to, but you certainly can't do that here, but there's a lot of feats in here that allow you to redirect an attack to yourself using something like defensive swap, or there's a lot of feats that involve your banner. You can plant your banner and get temporary hit points every round for everyone in the aura. You can also twirl your banner and intimidate, basically, or no, conceal. You get concealment off of that one. There's ways that you can use your banner to heal. This synergizes really well with medicine because you can get lore to your medicine checks. And eventually at level 14, you get a breath of life using medicine, which is wild.
Crazy.
So they're mimicking some spell effects here, which is really cool because you're not using a spell, such as haste. You can get haste with your banner, that kind of thing. They have a lot of like the fighter and champion shield feats. So conceivably, if you're using a fighter as a tank, you could use a commander as a tank. There's a lot of ways for them to be able to heal themselves and their allies, boost their allies, debuff their enemies, and they have the full martial attack progression, which means they're going to be able to hit. They can get reactive strike at level 6. They're going to be able to lock stuff down. So I think a commander actually makes a pretty suitable tank. There's feats in here to make it a ranged commander. This is my main critique with the class, I think. There are so many directions you can go, feat-wise.
Yeah.
And so many different choices you can make with your tactics, depending on your party. And so much skill compression. I think they do everything a little too well. I think it's not really in the class design of Pathfinder 2E classes to be able to do this many things competently or above competently.
Yeah, it's weird that the main criticism of this class, at least right now for us, is kind of like, it's almost too good. Like,
yeah,
it's kind of hard to not justify throwing one of these in your party, like, ever. It's
yeah, good. As is, this suits almost every party. I mean, there's stuff in here that allows you to cast a cantrip as a reaction. Like, one of the tactics lets you do that. That's almost nowhere else in the game, right?
Yeah. So, we like Commander. There's probably going to be some sort of adjustment. I hope they don't go too far in the other direction.
Well, the thing I'm thinking, though, is like these playtests always include like less options than the final thing.
Mm.
And if this is including less options, there's so much stuff you can do with a commander right now with this playtest. There are so many competent strategies you can use.
Yeah. Jeez. Well, you ready to move into Guardian?
Yeah.
Or is there anything left for Commander? We're probably going to touch on it a little
bit. Well, yeah, we'll touch on it a little bit in Guardian, too. I think there are some comparisons to be made. And, you know, I have some thoughts about Guardian as well as you go through.
Yeah. And please speak up whenever you do, because we're going to get into it right now. So Guardian, again, we've kind of discussed what this class is at face value. It is supposed to be like the tank class, which immediately there's something that sticks out as a little strange to me. The key attribute is strength. You really think that should be con for this class. You're going to want a whole bunch of hit points, especially if you're soaking up as much damage as you're supposed to be. I understand there's going to be reduction, which we will talk about, to that damage. But it's just a little odd because later we'll be talking about how so much of their actions are going to be caught up in taunting and doing a little bit of debuff and all of this type of stuff, that you're not going to be really swinging your sword probably too much. So strength is an odd one for me, but sure. Your hit points are 10 plus your con modifier. Talking about proficiencies, you start trained in perception, so a little lower than the champion there. Expert fortitude, trained reflex, expert will. Notably, when you go through the leveling, the fortitude and the will are ones that are going to do the successes become crit successes.
I think that's really cool for martial classes.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the ones that are most susceptible to things like being controlled are a little bit better at that will progression.
You are trained in a number of additional skills equal to 3 plus your int modifier, and you're trained in athletics right off the rip because they know you're going to be grappling and tripping people. Mm-hmm. So trained in simple martial unarmed attacks, defense, trained armor, unarmored defense, trained in Guardian class DC. Let's move into what happens when you start rolling up a Guardian here. So, Guardian armor. Even when you are struck, your armor protects you from some harm. You gain the armor specialization effects of medium and heavy armor. You can rest normally while wearing heavy and medium armor. So right off the rip, you get those little armor specialization things. Nice little gimme.
Notably, Commander also gets these at a later level.
All right. There are some key pieces of the class that you get at first level. First is your intercept strike. This is a reaction for when an adjacent ally takes physical damage. You fling yourself in the way of oncoming harm to protect an ally. You take the damage instead of your ally, though you gain resistance to all damage against the triggering damage equal to 2 plus your level. So this is very Shades of Ikmer here, doing the in's harm's way activity. You get your shield block right away. You get a taunt action. And this, I kind of feel, sharing space with the intercept strike is the barbarian rage, the ranger hunt prey, the esoteric lore of the thaumaturge. Like, this is kind of what a lot of the class is built around. So taunt is getting that aggro. So for one action, you do a gesture, a remark, or a shout, which can determine whether it has the visual or auditory trait. You draw the ire or aggro of a creature within 30 feet. This affects even mindless creatures, and they have to make a will save against your class DC. So, what does that will save get you? Critical success, nothing happens. Success, until the beginning of your next turn, the creature gains a +2 circumstance bonus to attack rolls it makes against you and its DCs of effects that target you. For area of effects, the DC increases only for you. It takes a -1 circumstance penalty to attack rolls and DCs when taking a hostile action that doesn't include you as a target. So you taunt them. If they respond to that taunt by attacking you, they get a bonus. If they attack somebody else, they get a penalty. Failure as a success, but penalty is -2. Crit fail as a success, but the penalty is -3. You also have what's called a threat technique in the playtest. They have two, although as you've kind of suggested, we may see more come out with the final printing of the material. So this is basically a little extra rider for things that are targeted by your taunt. There's one called Ferocious Vengeance, which allows you to deal 2 additional damage on strikes against creatures affected by your taunt if they take a hostile action that doesn't include you as the target. That increases by 2 at 9th and 16th level. I mean, sure. Tiny little band.
I have a hard time justifying Ferocious Vengeance because, you know, we may touch on this, but you have delayed martial proficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Like, delayed beyond a normal martial. You get, I believe, like, expert at 7 and master at 17.
Yeah, so you're not hitting all that often.
You're not hitting all that often. I mean, maybe with your first attack, but against a higher level enemy, likely not.
Mm-hmm. The next one makes a little bit more sense, though. Mitigate harm. You gain damage resistance from critical hits. No, that's not all hits. That's just criticals made by a creature affected by your taunt equal 2 plus half your level, which increases at 5th, 11th, and 15th level. I don't know. I read that, and I think it makes more sense if you're soaking up damage, but they are going to have that bonus to hit you, which theoretically means they should crit you more of the time, but also you are going to have like crazy AC. So are they going to be critting you all the time?
I think they will be, because if you notice in taunt, it is a bonus applied to the enemy.
Yes.
Whereas off guard is a penalty applied to you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you succeed at a taunt and are then flanked by that enemy, that's a 4-point swing to your AC. So I think you will get crit a decent amount of times.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. A couple fun things. Tough to kill at 3rd level. If you already have you get the die hard feat, which is great. First time each day, you'd be reduced to dying 3 or higher. You get dying 2 instead. Gives you a little bit extra survivability. Reaction time at 7th level. This is when your perception bumps up to expert, but you gain a reaction whenever you roll initiative for combat. So I guess if you roll low in initiative, you can still do a reaction.
That's probably important for this class, since most of its stuff is tied up in reactions in terms of how it mitigates damage.
Yes. And there's the rider on there that it's reactions from guardian feats or class features. So they're saying exactly what you're saying. Like, they know you need to be doing this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to allow you to do that right off the rip. Let's see here. We're going to kind of just move through the rest of this. And I think a little bit unlike our review of Commander, I do want to focus in on some feats, because that's kind of really it from
You do get legendary armor earlier than any other class at 15th.
Yes.
Although, you know, champion does scale to legendary, and I think monk might scale to legendary unarmored. I'm not sure. They get it later than you would as a guardian.
Mm-hmm. So we have some feats. We have one that's, hell, it's just called bodyguard. Hey, you know, like that's it. I actually do kind of like the first level feats. I think they're pretty thematic, and it would be a little difficult for me to choose which one I want to take right away. So that bodyguard, you intercept a strike against your charge. Your charge gains resistance to physical damage equal to 1+1/2 your level for one round. So basically, you're just giving your buddy like DR, which is cool. You have a long distance taunt where you can bump up that taunt to 120 feet. Reactive shield at first level, which is a reaction. An enemy hits you with a melee strike and you're wielding a shield. Basically, as a reaction, you can use the raise a shield action to gain your shield's bonus to AC, meaning that essentially if you take this feat, you don't have to spend an action during your turn to raise your shield in anticipation of needing to use your shield. You can just use this reaction instead.
Although you probably will, because most of the stuff that protects your allies is also a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So until you get like an extra reaction, it's good in certain circumstances.
But yeah.
Yeah.
So like, I can still see taking this though, because your intercept strike, which you'll get at one, is when an adjacent ally takes physical damage. So if you're not like right up on somebody's ass on your team, then it makes a little bit more sense to have. A shoulder check, you know, hey, one action feat, first level. You basically can make a strike against a target and make them off guard. That's fun. Second level, we have hampering sweeps caught my eye. For one action until the beginning of your next turn or until you move, whichever comes first, foes within reach of the weapon you are wielding or your unarmed attack can't use move actions to move outside the reach of your weapon or unarmed attack. You can just lock somebody in place, kind of.
Yeah.
They can move around you, but that's it. It's kind of cool. In fourth level, you can start like reflexively averting your gaze. If you're fighting somebody with a gaze attack, intercept energy instead of just physical damage. Intercept a foe. So if somebody gets hit, this is a reaction by you that's on your team. You can stride right up to them as a reaction, as long as you can get to them with that one move, and also give them a +2 circumstance bonus to their AC against the strike, which is kind of fun. Let's see here. What else do I find fun here? You get reactive strike at 6, very similar to the, it doesn't have the fighter tag. I don't know if there's something specifically different.
Well, fighter gets it at 1. Everybody else gets reactive strike at 6. A barbarian and swashbuckler and champion and now commander. All of these martial classes that get reactive strike get it at 6.
Okay, that's what I thought. Just usually you'll see one of like the other class tags on there, right? I think that's what I was
doing. I don't think they've done that for the playtest.
Got it. Yeah. That's what threw me off.
Because some of the other ones, like bodyguard is already a feat, I believe, that would have other tags, as well as some of the commander ones are like, hey, I know this is from fighter, and it's also something that investigator gets, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got stomp ground at 6 as well, where you stomp the ground, and each creature within a 5-foot emanation has got to do a reflex save. Crit success, nothing happens. Success, they're off guard. Failure, they're prone. Crit failure, they take the crit fail of being prone and take a little damage. I don't want to spend too much more time on some of these feats. I think there's just one that like really catches my attention that I think is fun. Tough cookie at 10. This is 2 actions once per day. If you drop in hit points below halfway, you can gain a number of temporary HP equal to the number of your maximum hit points that last for a minute. So if you have 100 hit points and you drop to 49, you get 50 bonus and you're back up to 99.
Half your maximum, right?
Yes. So it's a, I don't know. I think this is a good tank. I can see having fun with this. Of course, there are some restrictions. I think this isn't quite as dominant as Commander, but I think what they're trying to achieve with this class, they're essentially achieving. We'll see how much gets tuned, but I think
it's
fun.
Yeah, I think there's certain aspects of this that, to your point, like would really suit a Rocks play style. Like, you're certainly not attacking with that delayed martial weapon proficiency. Mm-hmm. So it would behoove you to be using athletics to mess with your enemy that way. There's a lot of good stuff, like you mentioned, to like lock people down and to run into the line of fire and that kind of thing, which I like. I think a good tank should be able to do that. But I think a lot of this relies on their class DC, which doesn't scale like the commander's does, certainly.
And
because of that, I wonder how much taunt falls off because of only the master scaling. You're likely going to be able to taunt like at level or lower stuff fine, but it's going to be really hard to get a taunt off against like a big bad, which arguably could be a situation where you don't want that to work because you're going to get crit to death. I think one thing that stood out in this class that I think was an interesting argument I had read on the Pathfinder subreddit was that unlike any other class, the Guardian is really safe when they're downed.
Oh, sure.
So they get stuff like the built-in Die Hard and that kind of thing. That, and I think there is either a feat or an ability later that allows them to auto-stabilize once per day. They get some stuff like that that makes them less of a priority to bring back up. That coupled with the fact that the only thing they're really doing is protecting allies from harm. They're not a big damage dealer. They don't have heals or anything that are really valuable. Your party doesn't have to take the, you know, multiple action tacks of bringing you back up. You're safe down there, so nobody has to burn an action to stabilize you, burn actions to heal you. You don't have to burn the three actions to get up and grab your weapon and, you know, or two weapons or whatever.
It negates a lot of the, like, Diego Vec treadmill.
Right.
Of, like, I just need to dump hit points into him to, like, get in front of me. Right?
Like, now, while I see that as an argument, I don't like that as a playstyle.
Sure,
that's really boring for the person playing a Guardian if that's how your party approaches it, because it's like, cool, I'm in the first three rounds of this six-round combat. I go down. Everybody basically says, it's better for us if we leave them down, basically, and finish this fight. And so I get to spend three rounds just watching everyone else play.
Yeah. Well, interesting. I'm curious to see what the feedback is generally and how these classes change. But we're getting kind of deep into this episode, Griff. Yeah. We got to get this goddamn crawfish boil.
You're right.
So let's hit some questions. All right.
Sounds good.
All right. First one comes from Pukeki. This is going to be a quick one for Griff. Is Grox's voice based off of Silver from Treasure Planet?
No, Grox's voice is based off of what I thought it would sound like for a pirate woman to have had her vocal cords slashed. So
it does.
If it sounds like Silver from Treasure Planet, that's great, because that's a professional voice actor and I am not. But no, I didn't base it off of that character.
All right. We have one from Eric/10Lawn Gnomes. What's something that you thought would be a way bigger problem given how much people warned you about it growing up? He gave some examples for us here. Quicksand or bees going into your soda cans. I've got a quick answer here.
Yeah.
You're never going to have a calculator in your pocket.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's a really good one. Yeah, that one's great. I think
Quicksand is a great answer for this. Yeah, that was in like every cartoon and it? Indiana Jones and all of that shit growing up.
You know, one that like created a fear that obviously like never happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe in Australia, but like the snake in a toilet thing.
Oh, sure.
Like the snakes on a plane scene, I can think of particularly.
Oh, that's horrifying.
That comes up a lot. That's like a fear that people have because of that, you know, very rarely if ever happens.
Now, maybe in another climate, we certainly don't have to worry about
that. Yeah, it could be.
I've seen some videos online.
Yeah, if you're in a place with snakes and they can get into your house, then I guess you got to look before you leap.
Yeah, careful there. All right, and then we're going to close it out on a question that I think is pretty fitting for this episode. Coming from Anarchy Wizard Ducktron, what's y'all's favorite and least favorite mechanic from the remaster so far? They also ask, same with classes. Now, I'm going to be extremely transparent. I don't think I'm going to be able to answer the second half of this. I haven't played a class yet that's been heavily impacted by the remaster and really haven't had a good opportunity to read through all of those classes. I can definitely talk about mechanics, though. Do you have an opinion on classes, or do you just want to hop into mechanics?
I think the War Priest Bard is top of mind for most people. I think that's definitely one of the better changes that they've made, is just, you know, bringing that from subpar to very viable. So I think that's definitely a cool change. They definitely listened to a lot of feedback when they made that.
Aren't there similar, and maybe I'm completely wrong on this, aren't there similar arguments to be made for like cleric war priesty stuff?
Or sorry, I meant war priest cleric. Did I say something else?
See, yeah. that just betrays how little I've read these. Because yeah, I heard the war priest bard. I was like, I guess that's a thing.
Bard must have also been in my head. Bard got some cool changes too. I think in a similar vein, the warfare bard got some buffs to be a little bit better in combat, but war priest got the best buffs in my opinion. I'm very excited to see Alchemist when it does come out.
Yeah.
But I think that's my answer for now.
Sweet. Well, let's talk about some mechanical stuff. I'm going to be a little selfish here. The two things that I want to call out are things that directly impact my characters. Making combat maneuvers agile. That's just fun.
They're not actually agile. It's just based off of what you're using to make the maneuver.
Oh.
So like your combat maneuvers are not agile as rocks because you're in mountain stance using your hands. So your hands, I think, lose agile when you're in mountain stance, right? Because you get a damage buff.
Probably.
So those wouldn't be agile, but like if you're using your regular hand as a regular character, it's agile because the fist is agile. Or if you're using an agile weapon to perform the maneuver, it's agile.
Well, hey, I learned something today. And then refocusing. It didn't make any damn sense to me that I could burn through 3 focus points and then just be on the treadmill of I can only refocus for 10 minutes to get one back and not be able to rest a little longer to get others. But now if you take more time, which takes time, of course, you can refocus back up to full on that. Kind of invalidates some of the things that you see with like, oh, psychic can get 2 back if they refocus and it's only amp activities. Or I think there are certain classes, I think Oracle's one of them, where later you can do like a 2-for-1. Or
yeah,
something.
Like the level 11, you got to be able to refocus 2 of your focus points or whatever. That stuff's all gone, which is just a better move.
Yeah.
But they had to, you know, kind of mess with focus point or focus spells as well, because those are now like a very valuable combat resource.
What is your favorite?
I mean, right now it's the aid thing with Jack, right?
Taking down the ADC, that's huge.
But I just think, you know, later levels that wouldn't have even mattered. You're hitting that ADC. It's not a scaling mechanic, so it just makes
later levels,
it just makes early level aid better. So I think that's my big one.
I'll do least favorite, and this is a little bit of a cop-out, but it's been really frustrating going through the remaster, and I understand how necessary this is, but spell and item name changes, where it's just like, oh, I know this spell still exists, but I'm trying to find it in Foundry, and I can't because I don't know what they called it.
And sometimes Nethys has the link to the legacy, and sometimes it doesn't, or vice versa.
It's just something we got to get used to, and it's not like a mechanical thing that's frustrating a gameplay or anything. It's just that, like, I hate that we had to do this, but it's understandable.
I dislike the cantrip scaling, the change to dice. It was nice to be able to get relatively consistent middling damage instead of, like, potentially rolling an electric arc that deals 2 damage.
Yeah.
That's not very satisfying, especially when you're spending 2 actions to do it. So I thought the modifier plus dice was a better way to handle that.
I agree too. I've seen arguments that like mathematically it makes more sense, but I don't care. I want that static.
Static damage is good damage.
Absolutely.
For anyone.
Well, we're nearing the top of the hour here, Griff, and I think that is all the questions that we want to answer today. Just want to do a little bit of housekeeping at the end here. Keep on listening to the Strange Table Fellows feed. Every Monday, they're dropping 2 episodes of our underground show that we did a little collab with them, Hideous Tomfoolery. I think we're well into book 2 at this point.
Yeah.
So book 3 will probably be spinning up shortly, and we're going to have to record the end of book 3.
Yeah.
We still got to do that.
Still going to do that.
And then if you are catching this around the time the episode drops, we have a live Zone of Truth coming up this Saturday. That's going to be May the 11th. And hey, we're going to be doing a seltzer review pack. We haven't done one of those in a while. If you want to drink along with us, it's going to be the Truly Unruly pack. 8% Truly.
Oh, boy.
Griff's excited for this one.
Yeah, can't you hear it?
Yeah, it's going to be fun. But I think that about does it. So you made your battle cry. I think, Griff, you made it out of the zone of truth.
Nice. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Later.